We'll begin the 6:30 Village Board meeting, a few minutes late due to the running late of the previous one. Everybody can stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, roll call. Trustee Harris.
Here.
Trustee Atwood.
Here.
Trustee Rafter.
Here.
President Gass is here. Trustee Dart.
Here.
Trustee Green.
Here.
Trustee Dennis.
Here.
All present and accounted for. Is there anyone here for item number 8, the request from the Greater Green Bay Chamber for the license to sell fermented alcohol? Okay. Is there anyone here from Heritage Hill for item number 9, the noise variance permit? All right, we'll move that up. I propose moving that up to 5A. Any other proposed modifications to the agenda? All right, hearing none, I'll make a motion that we adopt the agenda with the modification of moving 9 to item 5A. Is there a second? Trustee Rafter, any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Modified agenda adopted. Announcements. Any announcements from the board? Ms. Bainham? Any announcements from staff?
I just want to remind everyone of our farmers market. We'll be starting Thursday evening. We'll be starting in the Bellin parking lot from 4 to 7 p.m.
When's the first one, Trevor?
This Thursday.
This Thursday?
It'll go through October 15th, every Thursday evening. I'd also like to remind everyone about the Fort Howard Guardhouse Grand Opening event this Saturday at Heritage Show.
Yep.
This Saturday is July 11th, from 10 until 4:30.
All right, any other staff announcements? All right, hearing none, then we'll move to item 4 on the agenda. 4A, Girl Scout Troop 4276 is going to educate us on the 15-mile-per-hour speed limit. So, ladies? Hello, Robin. Nice to see you. We're not that scary. Oh, Trustee Dennis.
Yeah. Good evening. My name is Robin Raj, and I am the Girl Scout leader of Troop 4276. Been their leader since kindergarten. They are all 8th grade girls who just graduated from St. Matthew's School. And part of what they're doing is a silver award for Girl Scouts. And in order to do a silver award, they have to come up with an issue in the community that they feel is serious, that they believe they can have a long-term impact on. And I'm going to tell you what that is and how it works. The Girl Scouts we have are Grace O'Malley, Sheila Raj, Micah Dennis, Maggie DeBear, Rachel Johnson, and we also have Madeline Darling, who isn't here tonight due to a school function.
The problem that we have encountered is that people are not slowing down when driving past our school. We think that we can fix this by making signs that are more visible. We really believe that is important because we want to keep our students safe.
Some facts that we have. Our school speed limits are supposed to be 15, 20, and 20 miles per hour at the most when children or students are present. Drivers must stop for crossing guards when they are on the street with their stop signs. This law doesn't apply for just the safety of the students at that particular school, but all other schools. A lot of kids get off buses at St. Matt's and walk the rest of the way home. When hit by a traveling vehicle at 20 miles per hour, 9 out of 10 people survive. At 30 miles per hour, 5 out of 10 people survive. And at 40 miles per hour, 1 out of 10 people survive. The photos that we have are of the area around our school and the signs that are near our school.
We have come across many ideas for the front of the school, but the one we'd like to enforce is a radar speed sign, which will track your speed and how fast you are going. It will cost between $2,000 and $3,000 for a portable, and between $5,000 and $12,000 for a trailer mounted. They are AC, battery, or solar-powered speed signs. They can have flashing lights, and they can include a speed limit sign built into it. There are different types available, and they cost different, too. There are four daily timers available on some signs. They provide flexible scheduling for schools and more. There is a stealth mode available on some signs that allows the LED display to turn off, but the sign still collects traffic data. We have handouts for more details.
St. Matthew's School is located on South Webster Avenue. It is facing South Webster Avenue. South Webster Avenue comes off of a very popular highway where cars are going very fast, and when cars turn on to South Webster, they only slow down very little. We made a sign or a map, and yellow signs are where it indicates that there are school signs, and there is one right here, which is off the map because it is far away. It's right when you get off the highway. And then there's also one that is past the school, but it's on the correct side of the road if you are coming towards the school that way. And then these, the red or orange triangle signs, are signs that indicate that a crosswalk is coming up. So there's one right there near the crosswalk, and there is one right outside of the gym parking lot.
As you can see on the map, the signs are far away from the school, and when drivers are driving by, they're not noticeable. And so when driving, if people don't notice the signs and they drive directly past their school, most people don't think it's actually a school. They think it's a church because the church is attached to the school. And if they don't notice, they just speed right past. And even if they do notice it's a school, it's too late to slow down. And a crossing guard has been hit when she was crossing our students. And we'd like to stop this before someone gets hit again.
In conclusion, we would like to enforce the idea that a radar sign is put outside of St. Matthew's School on South Webster Avenue. We believe that kids should be kept safe. There are too many dangers that come with speeding, such as cars excelling speed, people getting hit, and car collisions. We would like to know how to administer the next step in this project.
Need to know if there's any questions or anything they did not address.
Well, I think I appreciate your concern, and thank you for making that presentation to the board. I mean, I like all the work that you put into the sign and actually seeing where the street signs are, you know, based on that drawing. You guys did a very nice job. And one thing that you said, you know, really was something I never thought of, which is a lot of people driving past just assume it's a church. You know, I know there's a school there, and you know, but probably two-thirds, if not more, of the people that travel Webster don't know that it's anything other than a church. So I think that's something that really raised my awareness. And I'm with you on the radar signs. You know, we've already had some discussions about that because due to Mr. Lang's fine negotiation work with the Brown County Sheriff's Department, we're saving some money in our police services contract for this upcoming year. And that was one of the things we were talking about was one of these portable radar signs, because I personally find them to be very effective. You know, when I'm driving, it flashes at me and tells me I'm going too fast. You pay attention a little bit. So it's something we are looking at, and I'll make sure that our public works director, Mr. Berndt, gets the handout on, you know, the radar design, pricing information, and the frequently asked questions that you were so kind to provide us. Does the board have any other questions or comments? Trustee Harris.
Sometimes we have to consider whether or not
we have the money in the budget to purchase certain things, and I like how you figured out different levels of the radar detectors, whether they're the portable, whether they have the trailer. Maybe something just as a lower cost for you guys to, when you thought about this, is what about just moving the signs closer? You could do that in addition to the radar guns, but then get more attention closer to the school. That would be something that may change things at a minimal cost. Something else to consider.
Well, and the nice thing, too, is your presentation is very timely because you got here early, as good as Girl Scouts would. and we were running a little late on our last meeting because we're talking about redoing Riverside Drive. And it's not too many years that we'll be redoing Webster Avenue as well, and we can definitely take some of these concerns and how we redesign Webster, because you know Riverside and Webster are two of our major thoroughfares, and we want to make them very pretty, you know, because they're major boulevards in our village. And we also want to make them very safe, you know, so when the redesign time comes, you know, through like it is for Riverside, we're talking about crosswalks and how to make them better lighted and better, you know, better signage and really make people slow down and pay attention. You know, we'll definitely take that into account when, you know, when Webster's redone. And when's that going to happen, Craig? Not for 18?
It was 2018 when we moved it back because of Riverside Drive. So it's in the 2020 time frame for a little bit later.
Okay, so in the next 5 years or so, Webster will be redone too, and you know, a lot of the information that you gave us will be useful as we look at redesigning that too. Any other more comments or questions?
I'd like to thank the group of girls for their work that they've done. One of the things that we should look at trying to do, which is fairly simple and easy, and that is that at the crosswalks now, there are those portable signs that you that say crosswalk. They are not put in the middle of the street during crossing times by the school, primarily because they're heavy, and the people who are the crossing guards are older folks who can't move them quite as well as what they had hoped. If there could be some assistance on moving those on a daily basis during school hours, that would help to slow down the speed on that zone, because then instead of being located on the island, they would then be in the middle of the lane, which would then cause people to have to slow down. That's just one thing that could be done that would have no cost to it. And the other thing is that it is a very dangerous place in the morning. A few years ago, the crossing guard who was severely injured and came close to dying was Ronnie Grummert, a fine member of our community. And she's with us today, thank God. But it is one of those things that it has been a concern for a while. And the only person who was injured, the girl, was, I believe, Bridget Winter, who was hurt a few years ago, that she was hurt quite seriously. And was also hospitalized. So it has been an ongoing concern, and thank you for bringing it up and to making us aware of this again, and I'm sure we'll have talks and discussions about what we can do, but your information that you've provided us has helped us to move that much further along in the process of solving the problem, recognizing the need to be able to improve, correct, and help to facilitate that area. So thank you for all the work.
Any other board questions or comments?
Just want to thank you guys for what you did. I mean, it's commendable that not just for a badge or a responsibility, but you did it for the right reasons. So, and it was very well detailed and explained. So thank you.
And the one thing I really liked was so many times people come and stand at that podium and tell us why we're wrong. Hopefully not too often, but they with some frequency they come and tell us why we're wrong. They never tell us how to make it right. And you pointed out a problem, but you also had solutions to the problem, so I appreciate that. So, thank you, ladies.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, the next item on the agenda is item 4B, the corridor study by our consultants.
Thank you.
Set up. I just wanted to thank the team of Grave for the work that they did in putting together the corridor study. It's a process that we started discussing almost a year ago. The goal was to have this completed by the end of June, which we did meet that time frame. And I think tonight we're going to get a nice overview of everything that was put together. The participation from the residents, the business owners, was extremely welcomed and appreciated. We couldn't do the project itself without all the participation, so that was one of the items we had discussed throughout the process, is the amount of energy that was brought to each and every meeting that we had. So with that, I think I'm going to turn it over to Stephanie.
I can give a second introduction while we're waiting, and then we might pause again. But good evening to all, to the Village Board, and then to the community members and stakeholders here this evening. We have had an absolutely enjoyable experience working here in the Village of Alloway. Because of the level of detail that you've provided us all in this process, it's a thoughtful community. You've provided us with specific insights, sometimes very detailed and very close to heart. And so we've taken that and pulled that into our final corridor study for both Riverside Drive and Webster Avenue that we hope provide the overarching experience that is intended to shape outside the right-of-way predominantly for Riverside Drive and Webster Avenue the future of Alloway per your visions. So that said, we do have hard copies that we can provide the Village Board after a presentation if we have a presentation to show. And we would really like to have that part running, so please give us one moment to check in. Okay, very good. Okay. Then perhaps what we can do is just let you know ahead of time that we know you have a long agenda, and we did have 60-ish slides, and if you put a minute each to those, then that would be a very long presentation. So we're going to try to keep it a little bit shorter. That does mean, though, that there's a lot of content within the document that we won't necessarily be able to cover at great length, and so we can entertain questions that are closest to you at the end or as we go through the presentation. So the first thing that we wanted to just recap was the process, and I think, Brad, you've covered some of that, that really we had the first session to open the conversation on Riverside Drive and Webster Avenue in February, and then we came back in March. It was February 19th and March 19th that we had back-to-back opportunities, first to listen and then to bring some concepts to the table and hear about how to modify those. And so those pieces of public engagement ultimately shaped what we brought tonight for the development scenarios. And so between January and June, that's the bulk of our input. We've also tried to incorporate, where appropriate, the CSS committee recommendations, and I know you discussed that earlier tonight, but we did allude to those as we have a part of this document that has streetscape design guidelines. So when you look at the corridor study overall tonight, you'll see that we have first the introduction, a section on corridor history and conditions, then we have a chapter on stakeholder engagement, outlining more about the process, not about the future, but what happened over the last 6 months that influenced the plan. And then there's the fourth chapter in the market analysis piece, the fifth being the development scenarios very specifically. And then in chapters 6 and 7, we have the streetscape design guidelines and then the implementation. So what we'd like to do is focus very heavily on implementation. That said, there are two things that are really critical for us to pass off to you as a board tonight. The first is that it's very easy, after this plan is now passed off to you, to treat that as a static moment in time. And we know how important it is for you to treat this like a working document. And so it needs to be opened regularly. There are specific concepts in the implementation section that call what village staff and elected officials should do, what developers, investors, builders, and brokers can do, and then what community stakeholders, be them property owners or residents, can do as well. So each implementation item that we list in that last section has three columns and says this is what you can do. And it has a relative level of generality, but then goes into some specifics where appropriate. So we have to treat this like a working document. We're available as a resource. We always will be. So if there are questions about how it could best use this working document, then we can be engaged. But you have everything that you need to do that. And the second item is that allocating resources, not just financial, but resources in terms of volunteer base, in terms of time invested, is so absolutely critical for this corridor study area moving forward. So as you can make the right decisions to have the staff engaged to make their decisions to invest in the corridor, that will help ultimately shape this plan. And I know that I'm not as entertaining as the two duo next to me, so I'll close for a moment.
It appears to be the projector.
So Brad's going to grab our other projector, and we'll be starting here in a moment.
Okay, we have no problem improvising. Hold on. Here's what I'm going to do. Because I have in my head memorized our presentation, and I know you can't see it. What we do have coming before the section on the market analysis are the development scenarios, and Larry's going to walk through those, but those are the most important to have the visuals for. So what I'd like to do is reorganize and talk just briefly about the market analysis and what we did so that in the end, the market conditions influence what we put into those development scenarios. So Chapter 4 in the market analysis has a couple of different tools that we used to influence the outcome. And one of them is the Esri Business Analyst Online. So I could ask for a show of hands on how many of you are familiar. I won't do that. But it's one of many tools out there and available among Claritas Data and others to look at what the market conditions are for a specific area. So what we did, and some of you may have seen the actual raw analysis, is we placed a dot at Webster and Alloway. And from there, we selected the 5, 10, and 15-minute drive times from that point. And Esri Business Analyst Online provides you with a quick snapshot of restaurant retail profiles. So we grabbed those. But then we also looked specifically at the retail marketplace profile. And what that does is it shows you the 5, 10, 15-minute drive times, where there's a surplus and where there's a leakage. And so that helped us look at, within a 5-minute drive time in particular, what amenities might be lacking and what where might there be an overage for specific services. And so
I'm impressed with you going off the top of your head with all that.
We've been looking at this document and working with you for how long I can go. Oh, you'd be bored out of your mind. With that, that's one of the tools that we used to influence our outcomes for that chapter. And the second one, though, is looking at very specific conditions within the corridor study area. And that's what we'll see on the screen eventually as this diagram, but the commercial occupancies. So we looked at, through three different sources of data, where do you have occupied commercial space, where is it vacant, where do you have properties for sale or for lease, and ultimately that helped us decide where can we make some very site-specific interventions, particularly through these development scenarios, that maybe allow a real-time change for a place that's for sale or for lease. Well, then we also have talked to many of you in the audience about your hopeful decisions on your properties as well. So we took those two pieces, among others, and came together with a synopsis. And what I think Larry would say if he were standing here is that the synopsis of the market analysis, we're seeing that communities right outside a center point, in this case Green Bay, are excellent and ideal starter communities. And I can say this, unfortunately, being on the tip of the millennial generation. But that being said, those are the places where you're looking for a one spot to start. And you have the opportunity to buy your starter home there, but it's not just a starter home, it's a starter community. Because ultimately you end up staying there for a lifetime. And that's what's happening for my friends and contacts and our colleagues who are experiencing that first point into a place and they're staying there. And Alloway has that opportunity to capture the market here in the Green Bay region, especially given that you are this beautiful, very tight-knit, small-town feel of a community with robust services. So that's something that is a conclusion we've taken from a market analysis and tied into the development scenarios. Okay. I'll pause there, and then we can jump back to what we have on screen. Does that sound okay?
Sure.
Any questions so far?
Nope.
Okay. I'll try to turn it. Okay, hi everyone. I'm Tanya Fonseca. I'm a planner at Grafe, and it's been a great pleasure to be working on this project with all of you in the community. So, tonight we're really going to take you through the document that Stephanie really shared. A lot of these slides you and the audience have seen, so I'll go through them quickly, but just for folks that haven't seen them yet. In general, this is our process and timeline for the project. We began in January, and as of today, we are wrapped up with it, sadly. But through the process, we have had lots of discussions and interviews with brokers and property owners. We've done the market analysis, as Stephanie shared, the development scenarios of which many of you have seen. And we've been coordinating closely with WISDA on the reconstruction plans for Riverside with monthly calls and whatnot. And, of course, with village staff throughout the process, which has been incredibly rewarding. So thank you. The project area, for any of you that are not familiar, it does cover Webster Avenue and Riverside Drive from the Green Bay border to 172. But it's not just the corridors, it's also the areas flanking that area. And so it's a complete corridor that we're looking at. We are providing streetscape recommendations, but it's really for those parcels that flank the corridors that we're making recommendations for. Stephanie even touched upon the feedback, so I'll just advance there. Project goals, with working closely with you, the visioning session that you had with village staff, and of course the open houses, it became very clear that the community wants destination and focal points. There's really a yearning for a downtown or a main street feel in the community, and what's great is there are opportunities for that here. It's a little challenging, but it is possible. Improving east-west connectivity is really crucial for the community. There's a lot of interest in it. There are a few opportunities, but there are some great ones, one of them including St. Joseph Avenue. Mixed-use redevelopment opportunities. There seems to be a huge yearning for that and a great opportunity for it, given that the development community really has a strong interest and sees that that's what communities want now, and there's a strong demand and desire in the community here. Let's see here. You've got a lot of great assets, and of course, given that WISDA is reconstructing Riverside, it's a really great opportunity to leverage that opportunity to do other redevelopment and development along that corridor, and the same with Webster, Lynn, the county, and you go forth with that. So as I kind of detailed, the vision is two corridors. Webster is more of your main street kind of corridor in the community, and Riverside has some opportunities for that along it, as well as some high-density residential along the river, which is such a great asset, and kind of a scenic drive, as what's becoming more clear through the WISDA reconstruction, what the community wants and what's naturally there. Of course, redevelopment opportunities, as we'll see more, these highlight the development scenarios that we're detailing tonight. Those are some prominent east-west connections in the community. And your parks and environmental features are really your greatest assets, which you already know and build on, but you really should continue to do so. I'm going to pass it off to Larry, who's going to plunge into the development scenarios.
So after we're finished tonight, we have the detailed report that we can distribute to all of you. And obviously, it's going to take some really detailed looking at what the words actually say and the diagrams actually say. And we can't go through that tonight. We'd be here for hours. But the point is that as you go through that, there may be some minor changes that you need or think make sense. We think we're very good, but none of us is perfect, so there may be some details in there that need to be changed. And these development scenarios
and the introduction to the development scenarios talks about the process that we went through and how they came about. And these development scenarios are not intended as final answers to what should be built, but they're also, when you do something and it's a guideline, sooner or later somebody says, oh, it's just a guideline, meaning that you don't have to pay any attention to it and you can just discard it. And these are not just guidelines, but they're not mandated solutions either. They're concepts that we think build on the sort of top-down guidance we got from listening to people and looking at the sites, and also built on sort of bottom-up information that we received. So they're very critical, and we will at the end talk about how we hope you can implement them. We don't want this to be a quote-unquote a shelf plan. We want you to move ahead, and we want to think that you can move ahead with the implementation. The development scenarios led to a series of potential projects, which we gave names to: an urban waterfront for Marine Street, a riverfront neighborhood, a shoreline development, the village center, and something which we hadn't anticipated at the beginning of the process, which we refer to as the Arboretum Trail. And so that's where the scenario thinking led. And one of the scenarios I'll try and go through in a little bit more detail, just to show you the level of detail that's in them, and then I'll flip through the others rather quickly because, again, we just don't really have time to go through them all today. So this one is called Marine Street. It's in the northwest corner. It's the first one that we included. And it talks about what the concept is. It talks about two scenarios that were developed. In some of the different areas, there are four or five scenarios, and in some, there's only one. There's no magic in having two. It really depends on the kind of feedback that you get and what the issues are. Whether you don't want to do a second one just for the sake of having two, but on the other hand, if two isn't enough, you want to do more. So some of them have more and some don't. This scenario has some very critical components. There are different building uses. There's a boardwalk and an overlook. There are certain ideas about the water's edge. This is the drawing of it. Unfortunately, I know that in this lighting and at this distance, you can't see the details, but they are very specific. There's a very specific key. So the letter A means a mixed-use building. And this building are all intended as mixed-use buildings. This one is intended simply as a residential building. There's a whole series of different kinds of open spaces. So this is intended really as a private garden, but this is intended as a public pier, and this is a public overlook. So there's a whole series of different kinds of public places in each. And as I said earlier, it's not intended to just be a guideline and the developer shows up and does whatever they want and it's just about tax base. But on the other hand, it doesn't have to absolutely be exactly like this. The whole point of listing all of these items is to talk about what might be in the public interest. In a lot of communities where we work, there's a presumption that if something adds to the tax base, that's it. It's in the public interest. That's all we need to care about. And actually, it isn't enough because with every private development comes costs. You know that because you look at your budgets every year. And you can go through a big cost-revenue analysis on every one of these projects. And we've been through that. And it's very difficult to be precise about that. But there are other things about the public interest that aren't about the tax base. So, for example, in this corner of the village, we thought you could create a kind of place that was both residential and mixed use and very exciting. As Stephanie mentioned, when we did the market analysis, we recognized that in lots of communities where there are new apartment buildings being built, the occupants of those apartments are renters. And many communities say, well, renters aren't going to help build our community. We want homeowners, because homeowners make a commitment. And as we started talking about that and the people we actually knew who were in this world of renting new places to live, we began to think, well, no, they're about making a commitment, but they just can't own. And they're not just looking for a starter apartment, they're looking for a starter community. So if this becomes a really great place to live, some of the people who might rent one of these units, if they're not condos, will ultimately live here. And so we think this is a spectacular site for that kind of high-intensity, mixed-use, residential, and retail and public place environment. We did two scenarios. In this one, we created what we called a loop street, where we show how as you come down from the bluff, you could actually loop through. And it's a two-way street, and the reason we made it two-way is we realized that if you had a very intense level of development and someone like me shows up and wants to go to dinner, I'm a tourist, I haven't been here a lot, I came here 10 years ago before this was built to do the plan, and now I'm back to go eat at one of the restaurants. If I drive down there and I get stuck on a one-way street, I'm not going to be too pleased. So you need some kind of loop circulation. This was one way to do it. And then the second scenario represented a different way to do it, where we actually carried the street across Riverside, and then down from the top of the bluff to the base, and then back out again. So one was a loop, one was a bluff road. Both of them are capable of being built, but the details have yet to be investigated. So you need structural analysis, piling analysis. The developer, the owner of the site, is going to have to figure out how to put this complex investment together. There's enormous potential with the TIF analysis, and the TIF analysis we're including in a separate document, right? So we have all those spreadsheets to show you how you could start off talking to owners and developers about this. In fact, there was one fellow I met from another development company we worked with, and when I told him about this, he said, "Oh, send that to me." And I haven't sent it to him yet because it hasn't been officially public yet, but as soon as it is, and I think there might be some others who might be interested in it. So take a look at it. Go over all the details. If there's a letter here that corresponds to something over here and you're not sure what it is, we can try to make it, we can try to explain it more, add labels, or do whatever we can to make these concepts a little bit more understandable. Because really, the next round is implementation. Here's a starting concept, a starting estimate, and now it's time to move it forward. And we included some illustrations of what things might look like. So we don't want to, again, it doesn't have to be this way, but this is a way to get it started, to show how it could all work together. This is the second scenario, a Riverside Drive in St. Joseph. And again, a detailed explanation of that. And then a series of diagrams that show different building footprints and how they might be developed, with a couple of different options and some illustrations. The third scenario, Webster and St. Joseph, shows a major intersection, we're really talking about this area in here. I think we had how many scenarios for this area?
We had four, but now we have two.
Oh, and I think there were some that we also discarded along the way because there was so much discussion about what should happen. So we have two scenarios here. And we started doing the SketchUp drawing. So this is the intersection of Webster over here. This is St. Joseph's. This is North. The Fox River is over here. The white buildings are potentially new buildings. Yellowish colored buildings, which were gray on our screen, I thought. They're showing up a little yellow here, are some of the existing structures. And they show you sort of a common setback over here, closer to the street over here, significant public place over here. And this is looking, this is south. Again, the river, Fox River is back here. This is St. Joseph. This is Webster. This is showing what that public space might be like. Why did we pick that spot to create a small outdoor plaza? Because it is, in a sense, the 100% traffic corner. There will be more visibility of activity out there than any other place. So we thought that if you were going to start that rebranding of Alloway as a kind of more urban active place, that's where it needs to be. You can't always put the plaza where you want it to be. It needs to go where the activity is. And there are a lot of ways of creating an innovative and exciting design that could locate it there. And we did parking counts, and we looked at the parking ratios. Not every owner may agree with the parking ratios that we came up with, but we've done enough developments in enough places to know that there are some developers who would say that our parking ratios that we generated are reasonable.
Larry,
yes.
Perhaps you want to speak to why the facades of the buildings are the way they are for massing, and less so for the articulation of detail.
Sure. When you do concepts like this, it's not the facade architecture that should be getting the attention. It's the street activity that should be getting the attention. And for maybe the last 20 years, a lot of urban design and planning companies, when they show these kinds of concepts, you show the buildings essentially as very simple white massing elements, because it's really going to be up to the owner and the developer to figure out what those details are. So what we're really trying to do is show the details of the public realm, so to speak, the outdoor spaces and the activities around it, and not the building specifically. Because you could get everything, you could have spectacular architectural elements, but if you get the setbacks wrong, the landscape wrong, the streetscape wrong, you don't have the activity out there, then you don't have anything. So it's not about the architecture, it's about the public experience and the outdoor spaces and how those fit together. And here are some examples. This is another, the next scenario. This was a little bit more scattered. They don't all follow the same model of a concentrated set of buildings. This is another one. This is further south on Riverside. This was interesting because we spent a lot of time thinking about this spot right here, because as was said at the beginning, one of the incredible aspects of Alloway are the two rivers and the spectacular environment, but you don't have a lot of lateral connections to the rivers. And we can't just magically wave a wand and create new public streets. They are where they are. And so the question is, wherever there was a public street, we tried to figure out a way to make it a connection to the river. And does it mean that you see it every day? Maybe, maybe not. But every time you drive down the street, you should remember what it was like when you did see the river there. And it starts to build a different attitude about the place. So we thought that it was really going to be important to have a view down Alloway that got you to the water. And we increased the density fairly substantially, at least for my preliminary looking at your zoning. This is denser than you currently would allow with the zoning. But on the other hand, we're not against developers making money. We just want to balance off a private interest with a public interest. So what we also did is said, okay, here is... this is the end of this is Alloway, right here, and we want people, when they walk or drive or bike down Alloway, to be able to see the river. And this is fairly important because, again, when I said something is a guideline, not a mandate, the architecture of these buildings, you could do a lot of different things to the facades, to the balconies, but if I was reviewing it, one of the things I'd be very insistent about is there not be obstacles built here that you can't see past. In other words, if you want to plant a tree where the crown is going to be over 5 feet, that, I'm sorry, the bottom of the crown over 5 feet, that's fine because your eyeball is low enough to see through that towards the river. But if you want to put up something that's going to be higher than 5 feet, don't do that because that's going to block the view of the river. So I think that that's a fairly critical issue. The other thing I just mentioned in terms of DOT, and jump in here if I get this wrong, I believe what DOT said was that the crosswalk on the north side of Riverside, where people would be making a right turn like this, that's where the crosswalk is going to go. But there's no crosswalk on this side, because the cars coming down this way are going to be making a left turn, and that left turn movement and the traffic signaling for pedestrians crossings are not compatible in terms of the DOT process of looking at those standards. Now, we said they were afraid there'd be too many accidents. Our argument was if you don't put in the crosswalk, you're still going to have kids running across the street. It's not going to be safer. It's going to be less safe. They said that the statistics don't confirm that approach. And so what we did, I think where it stands now, is that the design of Riverside can, with very modest changes in the future, handle this kind of a crosswalk. So it may not be there now, but it could be there in the future without a lot of extra effort. But that's kind of where we felt we sort of came up to the line of sort of saying what we think should happen and where the DOT has to, you know, take it from there or vice versa.
Larry?
Yes?
There are two things. One, in terms of looking at crosswalks, where they're recommended and where they aren't, and it maybe is less so an argument than it is just advocating for what could be value added relative to the development, because if there is more pedestrian traffic generated from the development, maybe that would constitute the need for that crosswalk that's not there now. So just elaborating on that. And then the second point is that what else can you see past the Fox River from this perspective?
Oh, yeah, I forgot. There's some football thing on the other side. Can never remember its name.
One last thing is WISDOT did mention that they could put electrical infrastructure there so that even if that crosswalk on the left side isn't on the south side of that intersection isn't there, it could be easily put in later on down the line. So something to keep in mind.
So that's the level of the detail of the compromise and the balance that the village and DOT need to work out. And I've been doing this long enough in other communities where we'll start off and the answer will be there will never be a traffic signal at that location ever. And then, you know, by the end of the project, there's a plan for a traffic signal, and a year later there is a traffic signal. So these things do have their own history. I think the key is getting it started. And this is the last scenario where we talk about this idea of an arboretum trail. Maybe that's too strong a phrase, arboretum, but the idea is that you could have a really beautiful, and this is just on the north side of the street because that's where we saw some of the double rows of trees. We really think you ought to strive for some kind of green space element that connects the Fox and the East River, and that would be a good place to do it, and it's one of the things we talked about in our proposal to your parks director. And we think that if you can get over to the East River, that's a spectacular opportunity. And again, in terms of the market analysis, the people we're trying, you know, the new people are going to be starting households. This is the kind of stuff they look for. So if you have the coffee shops and the great restaurants and you're next to the city of Green Bay and you have the trails and you also have a bus transit, you really have a spectacular kind of community lifestyle opportunity that some of the other so-called inner ring suburbs don't have. And that's a big plus. And this comes with the streetscape design guidelines with some details about how those should be implemented. And again, I know you can't see the details here, but they're in the report. And this is getting to the commercial occupancy diagram, which is Oh, you can do this without a slide.
Yeah, you can stay. You can stay up here. I'll only recap. This is what I was discussing earlier, and I'm going to call you back up in about 20 seconds, Larry. So, just to follow up the map, I know how to use the laser pointer.
Yeah, I don't think that I'm
very savvy.
Right corner.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. There we go. So this table here just represents the breakdown of the commercial occupancy specifically within the corridor study area, which was on that previous map. And so 60%, almost 61% is office, and then 36%, just in case the numbers are fuzzy, is commercial, and then industrial manufacturing as classified is almost 3%. So just thought you'd like to see that breakdown because, again, we're looking at a smaller subset of the village than the entire village boundary. And then this is the example of the Esri Business Analyst online data for the retail marketplace profile for drive times. So this shows you your 5 on the left, 10 in the middle, and 15-minute radius, and then the different industry groups, if you will, and what kind of activity they have. So you can see where, in some cases, there are industry groups where in the 5-minute drive time, there's a huge surplus, and then it changes, and vice versa. So it's very helpful to understand your local market within the 5-minute drive time, 10 and 15. I didn't put the map of the drive times in here, but it's in the document, and that shows you, you know, because you can imagine what the 15-minute drive time is. It's pretty vast. It's most of the region because everything's so accessible. So you can actually align these tables with the drive times on the map.
Okay, and then regarding implementation, and I do want to say one more thing about the market analysis. Usually you do a market analysis because you try to prove that there's a market so that developers and brokers and builders will be interested. But you're actually blessed right now with brokers, developers, and investors who are interested. And in a sense, the market analysis is there, but the real value is the people who are already interested. And part of what we talk about in the implementation, and I think this came up in a prior conversation, is getting those folks involved and getting them involved sooner rather than later. So in terms of implementation, there's a series of a few key recommendations right at the beginning. This report, this document, has no independent legal standing. Somebody could come forward and make a proposal to do something, and you could say, well, it doesn't match this plan, and they could say, so what? And it would be very hard to answer that question. So we recommend right off the bat that you incorporate this corridor plan as an amendment to your comprehensive plan, and that gives it a kind of legal status, and that's commonly done in other communities. That you have something which is an amendment to the comprehensive plan. It isn't fixed in stone. You can change it any month you want to with resolutions and the proper public notice, but it does give it a standing and a foothold so that when a developer asks, what do you want, or where's your comprehensive plan, you can point to this. Now, you can lead them to it. And we would strongly urge you to do that as part of the first step of implementation. The second step has to do with your zoning and your land division ordinance. And we haven't had a chance really to talk about this with the village attorney, right?
No, but you can advance to show the example on the slide. That's the first one, and then the second one.
You have what's called with different euphemisms for it, pyramidal zoning, or sometimes they call it like the Russian doll zoning, where industrial zoning allows everything in the highest level commercial category, the highest level commercial category allows everything below that, and all the way down to single-family residential. So if you're in a single-family residential district, all you can build is single-family residential. If you're up a notch in multifamily, you can build multi or single. If you're way at the top and it's zoned industrial, you could build a factory, you could build a single-family house, you could build a drugstore, you could build whatever you wanted because it's nested like that. We don't come across zoning codes like that anymore. As far as we can tell, from the standpoint of best practices in zoning, Nobody really does that anymore, except in areas that are very, very, in some rural towns that have their own zoning and nothing's really happening and, you know, nobody's built anything very different in 30, 40 years, and we work in those places. Two, pyramidal zoning isn't a big deal, but we don't recommend that you continue that. It isn't hard to change. It's simply crossing out a line or two in each of your districts. And we also recommend that you add a couple of districts that we think are very critical for uses that you do have along the corridor. One is institutional zoning. You have a lot of healthcare institutions, religious institutions, educational institutions, and that is civic government buildings. That's a legitimate separate category for a lot of communities. And the other might be some kind of conservation type of district for environmental features, which need to be preserved or could be preserved, and where it's both in the interest of the landowner and the community as a whole. And we didn't draw it out, we didn't write the words, we're just saying we really think you should consider something like that. I've been involved in a lot of communities where there's different kind of corridor, environmental preservation corridors, and I am not, absolutely not trying to suggest that you impose on landowners restrictions on what they can and cannot do with their environmental features. I don't think that's appropriate. But nonetheless, you could have an environmental district added to your zoning code, and in many cases, it's a benefit all the way around. So that's kind of the second major recommendation. And also, we wanted to look at your land division code. I think when we started this, I forget what the exact issue was, but we were under the impression that you didn't approve land divisions, that the county approved them for you. And I'd never seen that before in a village or a city. It's always been the village or city that approved their own land division. It was never done by another higher-level agency. And I didn't really have time to check Howard and De Pere and the Schwabenen, but typically a land division is a very big deal, and it's sometimes even a bigger deal than the zoning. And land divisions, by state statute, are supposed to be consistent with the comp plan. So our annexations, you're not contemplating any of those. Easements are supposed to be consistent with your comp plan, and zoning changes consistent with your comp plan. The word consistent is not well defined anywhere. But yet it's still part of the legislation. So we thought that maybe some tweaking of your zoning and your land division code might be appropriate. And those are sort of the big implementation exceptions, right? And you're going to go through the next set?
I'll be quick, because I know we want time for questions and answers and comments, of course. But one thing I wanted to touch upon is we were really excited, just given the involvement in the community and all of your leadership, to try something new with our implementation chapters, which was indicate, you know, for the different readers of this plan what their role is. So I use this opportunity to welcome all of you and share it with anyone in the community that you think would be of interest to review it, and that there are action items for each and every one of you in the plan, whether you're just a resident or, you know, a property owner, an investor, staff member, what have you. So I think an exciting thing, and we know that the community will really use that and benefit from this. We were excited to include that. So the third recommendation is to continue site investigations and analyses, so that really includes due diligence. We included a list of due diligence and recommended steps for that. You do, given topography and some of the environmental features in the community, have some site constraints, but nothing crazy, but just something to keep in mind as you go forward in the development process. Focus on public and private partnerships, pro-business and pro-community. Here we're really talking about kind of shared risk between the village and developers and property owners. And that diagram there is a key one to take a look at. Just different different incidences where that risk is unbalanced and how that can, you know, lead to sort of unfair or unbalanced projects and results. And so we recommend you take a close look at that, just in that there should be shared risk between the village and developers going forward. So I think particularly when it comes to TIF and other incentives is something to really keep close in mind. A communication system for village staff, developers, investors. Last meeting on May 18th, we did talk about your interest in doing briefings with brokers and investors and other business community members, and we think that that is really key to get the ball rolling. There are other opportunities for that too, whether it's tours of the community, home buyer tours for, you know, millennials like me that would love to, you know, learn about the amenities in this community where people wouldn't see it otherwise. I think there's some really great opportunities to do some unique programs to really be proactive and, you know, bring what you want to the community. Some cost scenarios. We have some recommendations for consideration, and we did include an example of a pro forma just to kind of show for this particular one. It's for Alloway and Riverside Drive, so you can take a look at that and see, you know, what a pro forma would look like for one of these development scenarios, and just some. And of course, that is a conceptual pro forma, but just to kind of give a guide for what to look for going forward as we go through redevelopment in the community. Develop long-term plans, phasing, and improve infrastructure in the community. So there are a lot of recommendations. One thing that came up a lot was burying the power lines along Riverside Drive and Webster Avenue, and so there are some recommendations for considering that as well as additional public roads. There aren't very many opportunities in the village, but in some of the larger swaths of land, the few that you have, there are some opportunities for that. And of course, you know, we want to drive home the idea that these development scenarios aren't going to happen overnight. So long-term planning and phasing is going to really be key to accomplish, you know, the ultimate vision. And finally, make stellar public places and trails. You already have them, and the community wants more, which is such a spectacular thing. So we do have some recommendations, including the Arboretum Trail, but some additions, including some stronger connections along Fox River Trail and some other public spaces. So finally, I want to wrap up that we do tie each recommendation to each district with some additional action items. You can see that not only are they kind of general and can apply to the village as a whole, to be honest, a lot of these also apply more specifically to the districts and the development scenarios. So at that, I think we're ready for questions and answers.
All right. Does the board have any questions concerning the corridor that's been presented? Trustee Rapp?
I have a couple. First of all, thank you very much. You've all put an awful lot of work into that, and I appreciate it. What types of businesses do you see Alloway lacking in our 5, 10, 15 minute? What kind of businesses is it that we want to attract in those mixed-use developments?
First, let's pull up the table, and then Larry, you can speak generally to that within the development scenarios first. Oh, thank you. Well, let me pull it up. Thank you. Okay. One of the examples, just so you can see a real dichotomy, I want to pick out two. The grocery stores, and then the other is the food and beverage stores, which are different industry groups but obviously have overlap, and we could give you the detailed descriptions of each so you know how they're different. But for the 5-minute drive time, you can see that there's a large surplus indicated for food and beverage and for grocery stores. And then as you get further out, that changes greatly. So let me try to pull it up with the laser pointer. But the grocery store is right here, food and beverage right here. And as you draw your line across, you can start to see that the 10-minute changes, and then it goes back to a surplus. And then here for the grocery stores. So I just want to give you some examples before we give a big picture answer about how you can analyze and slice and dice. The other example, let's see, I'm looking at gas stations, showing that there is here for gasoline stations. I'm going to make sure it's okay. There. That, so it's showing that there is actually a leakage, but then as you go further out, that changes into a surplus, or excuse me, leakage, and then a slight surplus as you get to 15 minutes.
So overall, what we had envisioned happening within the development scenarios would be to have a very high activity retail front and restaurant operation at the Webster Avenue and Alloway Avenue intersection in particular, and that's why the renderings show that plaza space, so that there is a generator of outside dining if possible. And the same is true in a large degree to Marine Street because we've experienced what's already there and what that could add. So a lot of the restaurant activity and retail activity we thought would be most appropriate for those two intersections. Are there others?
No, I think that is the key type of business we would like to see you try to focus on. And in most of the market analyses we've done for communities that are urban, entering suburbs, it's a remarkably simple answer. There's usually nothing missing. I doubt that anybody here goes out to buy something and can't find it. You get to where you need to go, whether it's a grocery store or a restaurant or a coffee shop, or it's buying a car or an appliance. You can find all those things. It's not like they're missing. So the issue is really competition. How can you locate things in Alloway or help investors and brokers locate things in Alloway that will be effectively competitive with their counterparts in other places?
And in your report, do you have examples of that? What is that? What that chart shows? Pardon my ignorance.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, the examples for which?
The types of businesses that we want to attract.
Yes.
But one of the keys to doing that is building up the immediate population density that it can service. So, for example, it could be that with just three or four new apartment structures, each with, say, 20 units, 80 units, 100 units, located in the right spot with a bar, or restaurant, or cafe at the ground level, that will be enough to get that first business moving and plant the seed. And as Stephanie said, the two locations that we would right off the bat target for that, one is the intersection of Webster and St. Joseph's, and the other is the Marine Street development.
Okay.
The other addition is that we don't outline specific businesses by name. So to fully answer your question, because if we list that you should have something like an Applebee's, that will disenfranchise any creative conversation from those that might have a retailer of interest. So I think you could assume that, but just to be clear that we didn't list very specific business names.
Oh, yeah.
We often find that to be counterintuitive to having a good conversation.
We also find that very often the best way to do it is to say, and we talked about this, if you get some developers in the door, speaking to them individually and saying, here's the location, here's the kind of building type we're recommending to the village. If this building was built and you were the leasing agent, you were looking for somebody to put on the ground floor, who would you go after? And they usually tell you right away because they have their fingers on that pulse much better than Esri does.
One other thing I'd like to add is it does highlight experiential and entertainment uses, which face less competition from online shopping and a lot of the other retail centers in the region. And it also conveniently goes hand in hand with what the community seems to really strongly desire. A lot of the feedback was, I want a coffee shop in the community with a splash pad outside, or I want more restaurants, more family-friendly restaurants. And so I think that... And that's also consistent with the comp plan, with Marine Street being kind of an entertainment district, kind of a focal point, and I think that can also draw from the region and not just Alloway itself.
One last question.
And forgive me, I said Webster and Alloway earlier. I'm thinking back when we were talking about Webster.
The other thing about where you could do this first, the reason we talk about St. Joseph's and Webster, because it is the 100% corner. Now, does it go on the northwest corner, the northeast corner, the southeast corner? We don't care. It goes wherever you can get it first. And it might be the easiest one to do, requiring the least amount of intervention. It might require some subsidy from the village to make that first one work. When we drove down the street, we said we want people to be able to drive down Webster and see outdoor tables with umbrellas on it and people sitting around having a meal, drinking coffee, doing something. That changes the image for everybody going up and down the street all day long. Now, the reason we picked Marine Street as the second option, because in terms of achievability from a technical standpoint, it's off the charts, right? It's an incredibly complicated site. But its potential is also off the charts. I mean, it is really just one of the most spectacular sites, and it doesn't face the essentially the implied political burden of overcoming regulations to building something on the water's edge. There's so many sites in Wisconsin where that's just an absolutely prohibited thing. You have a site where you could put stuff, real development, intense development, 700 housing units and other things right on the water's edge. So, and they were sort of the kitty corner diagonal opposites. I think Tanya showed a diagram of four corners that we thought sort of defined the major scenario opportunities.
Thank you. One last question. I know you don't like to discuss or show architectural styles, but what, based on all of the open meetings that we've had and the resident feedback, what architectural character do you see for Alloway?
We're both going to look at Leary, because Leary's written more design guidelines regarding architectural details for communities in the state. So you should start.
When I started in design, there were no computers. We drew everything by hand. I've been through about 10 waves of different styles. I would say the only thing that I don't like to see is a certain kind of modernism, because I think it doesn't reflect a friendliness to the general public. So I think if you have, there are contemporary buildings that have flat roofs, but they're not solid glass walls, they're not blank walls, they have awnings and technical term in architectures, they have punched openings, so they're not curtain walls, and they work just fine. There are also some traditional buildings that work very well as contemporary buildings. Typically, when you say the word traditional to architects, they immediately picture a gable roof. And frankly, I don't think it matters a whole lot whether the building has a gable roof or doesn't have a gable roof. I think what matters is that it has a sense of intimacy and detail on it. And you don't get that necessarily. This is another thing architects do a lot, which drives me a little nuts, is they just think that if they keep changing the material and the color and they push the facade in and then they pull it out and they raise it and they lower it, then it's going to be interesting. It's not going to be interesting because of the things they do to the facade. It's going to be interesting because they attract people to walk by or sit next to their building. And so that's the sidewalk and the front yard, and do they have balconies and things of that nature. So the architectural style isn't, to me, as important as all those other features. I don't know, did we include like the diagram we have of the seven zones for the facades? No. We could pass that along to you.
I think one thing was clear, showing the visual preferences in the February open house, was that the community really liked traditional architecture that was consistent with the historic community and the historic structures that are in the community. So I think that consistency, it was also very clear that very modern buildings were not very popular, but some that were blended, modern, traditional, were fine. So.
Hey, thanks.
Does that answer your question?
Yep, thanks.
Okay. Any other questions with the board? I have one. In terms of the future use of the old Village Hall site, might that be better left green as a public park? I mean, assuming this whole downtown concept, comes to be, which I hope it does, and I agree with you that that is the downtown corner. I mean, might that be better left alone? I mean, to become a little park where you could have music on a Wednesday night or something near the downtown. I mean, we've entertained some proposals to sell it, and might that be something we want to consider, just leaving it as is? Granted, the tax base is fantastic, but might that be a nice complement to the downtown scenario to have kind of an open space there?
Two things come to mind to respond. First, if that desire is everything, if that desire is strong in the community, not just here in this room, but outside, to have that stay as such, then that is a number one factor. The second is that the programming will be so
significantly important to its success. So if you were to say, you know, we respect the development scenarios, we see the connectivity, but we think ultimately this site is the best fit for keeping its open space, the programming being set out the gate to have a summer concert series, you know, specific winter activities, setting that vision will ultimately also drive how the open space is planned. And so that would then in turn say, okay, do we have a space where we can put in, you know, planks for a movable ice rink, because that's what we want to see happen there in the winter. So if you can set programming up front that matches the desire to keep that as open space, then absolutely. So there, you know, that's the decision tree that can happen in multiple cases. So I'm glad you bring that up for that site as an example.
I don't remember the dimensions of the site. Does anybody remember the dimensions of the site?
No. Yeah. Who has an architectural scale?
Well, here's what I wanted to mention. And this is, there are a lot of rules in planning and development which over the last 20 years have flipped. So it used to be we had a parking minimum, now some communities have a parking maximum. And one of the things about public spaces which you want to be active, not a natural park setting, which you don't always want to be active, but an urban park where you want it to be active, is they can very easily be too big. But it's very hard to make them too small, because you want to see activity in them. And so I don't remember the dimensions, but I would just say that that's an issue, that you have to make sure that when people are there, it's not going to feel too big. And forgive me, I don't remember the dimensions at all.
There may be some opportunity to do both. Right. I think the site's large enough, and having that the people in that building could really spur a lot of activity there too. So you could really have best of both worlds on that site too, and be creative that way.
One more thing about doing that kind of a park. I won't mention the community that's doing this, but they wanted to have everything in there, but in the kitchen sink. So it's sloped, it's raised, it has tables here, it has something else over there. It's got everything you could possibly imagine. And I just think that that's a huge mistake. That if you want to let the park grow and evolve, think of it as having a lifespan. Start it off the right size, give it some nice edges. Don't fill it with stuff, and see what happens. And if the first year you get that portable stage out there and it's really a great success, keep it going. We're doing some work in South Milwaukee, and they just had a lunch truck festival that brought 3,000 people to their site.
And I think there were only like 3 or 4 food trucks, so they ran out of food within
minutes. Right. And now they're going to repeat that event in September. So you don't want to, you want to program events, but you don't want to over-design the park. So you can start it off small and just be creative about this. Bayshore Shopping Mall has, every year they have a chalk drawing contest where they close off their interior street and kids just come there and have a contest and they draw chalk. So it's that kind of thinking that's more important than making a bunch of stuff in it.
Perfect. Thank you.
What size would you say would you define as small?
What size?
Physically. Well, like an acre, 2 acres?
I think an acre is actually kind of large.
Okay.
200 by. So, for example, the phrase Best Pockets Park actually started in the middle of Manhattan in a little park that is, I think, about 50 feet wide by 100 feet deep. Okay? So, 200 by 200 is pretty big.
It's because that Village Hall site is a 2-acre site.
So that's a lot of space. So what do? You plant, well, we can talk about it. Sometimes you just plant double rows of trees around the edge so that you can bring it in. There's certain things you can do visually to make it start to feel smaller and tighter. But the key, again, is when somebody, if it's just two people out for a walk and they want to sit in the park, you don't want to create something where they feel completely lost. So there has to be, maybe it's the corners or it's the entry where there's a little sense of intimacy and sitting down there, stuff like that.
So are you saying then that the definition of what you put into it can determine the viability of usage? So you're saying you can make it smaller by putting in plantings or putting in a ice rink, gazebo, whatever.
What I'm saying is I wouldn't put those things in there right away. Right. I would let it mature and also see what it looks like. And the other thing we often recommend to communities is just start it and then go out there and look at it. Because, I was our associate dean at the School of Architecture for 15 years, and we built a new building. And I asked everybody where they wanted to go, which office they wanted, and all that kind of stuff. Architects, all 30 of them. And the day when we walked in the building, they said, oh, I didn't know it was going to look like this. And I'm thinking, this is your profession. You're supposed to be able to visualize this stuff. So don't come to me and say, well, there's a pipe in my office. I didn't know it was going to be there. And I pointed out on the plan, right? So these are architects who can't visualize things. So everyday people, it's very hard to visualize how big something is going to feel. So that's why you just invest the minimum and go out there and look at it and see what it's like. And then decide on gazebos or ice rinks or whatever.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other more questions? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the time.
Appreciate the presentation and all the hard work. In terms of future handling of this issue, what I would propose is that we, one, put the corridor study on the website, two, circulate the corridor study to Economic Development Committee, Historic Preservation, the Plan Commission, the Alloway Business Association, Public Works, Park and Rec, have their commentary and input by the first meeting in September. I think that'll give us plenty of time to get input. Then I'd have an opportunity for the public to be heard at the first meeting in September. We'll receive all the committee input into the corridor study. We'll have a discussion at the board level. And then for the second meeting in September, what I would propose is that we formally adopt the corridor study or amend the corridor study. At that second meeting in September, also amend the comprehensive plan to make the corridor study part of the comprehensive plan. That seemed to be a workable schedule. So we keep moving forward, but we do give enough time for our committees to digest the report and provide commentary, and then we'll have public comment at that first meeting in September as well. So, did you get all that, Debbie?
I think so.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you again.
Thank you.
All right, we'll move on to item 5 of the agenda, which is public appearances. Anyone can speak on any subject they choose. The board can only take action on those issues that are identified as action items on the agenda. So if anyone wants to speak from the public, Becky.
Where can you get a copy of the agenda?
There should have been one right at the front desk, or a chair at the front, sir.
Thank you.
I'm Becky Nyberg, and I live at 214 Simnett Street. I just wanted to bring up the path out alongside 172. I wanted to say thank you and for supporting it, and it's wonderful, and it went in, and it's being used, and it's about a block and a half from my house, and I can walk from my house down to the Fox River Trail in 12 minutes now. The one thing, I have brought up to Brad, and I did email the DOT, is that now there's way more traffic trying to cross Webster, and I wanted the board members to go up there and try to cross the street and try to figure out the lights. Because there's the path puts you out, and when you get there, you see lights, and you're like, oh, yeah, it's easy across the street where there's lights. But you go there, and if you stand, you come up the path, you stand on Webster, you face east. There are people coming at you, but you don't know. I stood there with my husband. We could not figure out the traffic signals. We finally just stood there until there were no cars coming, because we're two people who walk and bike a lot. We couldn't figure out how to cross the street. And it wasn't until the third time I was there that I figured out that if I turn around and look behind me, then I can see the light for the cars coming at me. Then I know that when they have a green light, then I can go across the street, because there's red turn lanes, there's red and lights, and it's impossible to figure out. I emailed and said we really need a pedestrian head there sooner rather than later because people are going to start using it, and somebody's going to get hurt trying to figure out the traffic. And so I brought up to Brad. I emailed Derek Weyer with the DOT, and he said something about Webster being done in 2016, which is next year. But I'm not sure that it should wait until next year. I mean, I'd like it. I've gone through there four times, and it took me until the third time to figure out to look behind me. And my husband's actually just used the mirror from my bike and just look over my shoulder with a mirror, but or put a mirror, or just mount a mirror on a pole and tell people to look behind them. I just wanted to. I know they're looking at it, and I know, but I just wanted to make the board aware of it to make sure that something's done about it because it's really. I'm not a big proponent of always having to have walk signs. If there's lights there, people can figure out which way to go. But because there's no traffic coming in both directions, like it's just coming off the highway, it's impossible for the person standing on the corner to figure out. So just to make sure you're aware of that and to go look yourself and to make sure that it moves along.
What specifically, what corner there?
Webster and 172. And there's a couple of problems with it. When the path comes up, you have to cross the pork chop, and I basically people are coming and turning right. I will stand there with my hand out and wait until somebody stops. I put my hand out and say, I'm coming across, and it usually takes one or two people passing me before the third one stops, and then I can cross the pork chop. But then once you get on that pork chop island, you can't tell who's coming from which direction. And the other alternative is coming off the island, going the other way down the sidewalk. Sometimes I will cross, just walk my bike across and stand in the middle on the grass and then cross it with view. But there's no, you have to go up the sidewalk or to go down to Heritage Hill and try to cross there. And there's no light there. So you think there's a light, you think it's the safest place to cross, you get there, and you can't figure out the lights. So that's the problem. So, and we're putting more people up there. There's a lot more people coming up there, a lot more people using it now than there was in the past. So it just needs to, because I've lived there a long time, and I've never tried to cross that way before. I've always crossed, straight across Webster when I walk down to the other side. So it was the first time I had tried to cross that way in 12 years. So,
thank you.
Just wanted to let you know.
I will say, being an avid walker in the area too, I can sympathize with what you're saying because that is a tricky corner. Unfortunately, I don't have a solution to it. I mean, there's just so much traffic coming from different areas.
Well, even just to have a pedestrian signal that when you're standing there, the light goes on and the hand goes on that is connected to the light, that's all it needs is what they call a pedestrian. It just needs to have the pedestrian signal connected to the lights so that when you're looking across the street, you see what you're supposed to do. That's all it needs is just the pet head, as they call it, and there's no there. So.
I just want a remote control that I can stop all cars when I'm crossing.
There is a change that's going to be made in that intersection in regards to traffic flow specifically and in relation to access to 172 from that spot. Is that something that we could take a look at and see or not? I don't know. I mean, I'm just talking here. But is that something we could consider or look at or
172
see if there's a warrant for that kind of thing? Or
is it okay if I speak?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm Dan Sigurdsson for DOT, if anyone doesn't know that. We have a HISA project going on there next year. It's a highway safety improvement program project. And it has to do with that weave that we have going on between the connector between Riverside and Webster and then the entrance onto the highway. And it's to help increase the safety of that weave. And so it's that pork chop island being pulled in and all that. We have taken into consideration the pedestrian crossing there, and we have designed it to account for that, to try and make it as safe as possible. The ped heads, unfortunately, we're going to be putting up new signals there. And they, I believe they're going to have the pedestrian heads on. And that's what Derek probably referred to. But to do it immediately, I'm not a traffic signal expert, but I do know enough to say that you have to have the proper wiring already set up in the traffic signals and in the control cabinet that's there. So it's not just a matter of going and putting a ped head up and plugging it in. You'd have to, they'd have to check and make sure that the wiring that's already in the signal can receive that, and that the control cabinet can be modified to account for that pedestrian signal in there. My instinct tells me it's not set up for that. So it's not something that could be a quick fix where you can say, okay, just get the money for a ped head, go out there, go it up in 2 weeks. It might just require that you have to rewire the signals, and that can't be done until you pull all the wires, which we will be doing next year. So unfortunately, I don't see an easy quick fix. You could ask Derek about it, though. You could.
And what was the time frame that just got happened? I mean, ballpark is.
I think they mentioned fall 16, didn't they?
Yeah, it's in 2016. And I think it's in late summer.
Yeah.
It's going to be like a 1 week project. We're going to try and get it all done in 5 days because you're going to have that westbound turn lane is going to be shut off during that reconstruction, so we're trying to do it as quick as possible. So I think it's like the next August, September. Next August.
So about a year.
Yeah, about a year.
Okay, any other public comment during the public appearance section of the agenda? Mr. O'Rourke.
Jim O'Rourke, 2339 Oakwood Avenue. I enjoyed the great presentation. It was terrific. I'd like to encourage the board to authorize them to go ahead and finish the corridor study for the next phase down from 172 down to the village limit. Grave was brought on board because there was an urgent need for professionals to represent the interests of property owners along the highway 57 corridor, so that we could have professionals talking with the DOT, and we could have professionals with a realistic vision come in and tell us what is and what is not feasible. So I like what I saw today, and I'd like to encourage the board to authorize funding for Grave to go ahead and finish off. I was on the committee that was in the selection of it, and I'm truly surprised at the amount of work that we got done for the budget that was allocated. They did a terrific job. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment during public appearance? All right, hearing none, I'll close that section of the agenda. Then the next agenda item is the old number 9, the noise variance permit for hops on the hill at Heritage Park. And we do have a representative who would like to come and tell the board a little bit about it, although it is a recurring event and it is lots of fun. So.
This will be our 8th annual Hops on the Hill. It is on July 23rd, and we're just asking for the noise variance. We do have live music from 6, well, the event itself is from 6 to 8:30. The live music is from around 6 to 7:30, quarter to 8.
Could you please state your name for the record?
Kathleen Gusser, 2508 Trojan Drive.
Thank you. Does the board have any questions of our Heritage Hill representative? I think you sat around for a pretty quick agenda item. Is there a motion concerning the application for the noise variance? Trustee Rafter.
Are you moving nodding for her?
Are you moving?
I'm in agreement.
To grant the noise variance?
Yes, I am.
Is there a second to that motion? Trustee Dart. Is there any discussion concerning this motion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? I will abstain. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hope we entertained you for a little while.
It was entertaining.
Thank you.
She stayed for the rest.
Yeah. All right. Then we're back to the regular agenda item number 6, recommendation to Department of Transportation regarding Riverside Drive CSS project improvements. I think we got a lot of information. Is there a time frame? I mean, a time frame where they need... I mean, I know they'll eventually need the information, but, I mean, we had a lot of information in the 545 session that we digested.
In the discussion we had with the DOT, July timeframe, early August. That's the window. So I guess if you wanted to think about this and do it at the next board meeting, that probably would work out fine. But it's, you know, July, early August is really the time frame they want to be able to proceed.
And what we're talking about are definitive answers to the questions that were discussed at the 5:45 session. What I would recommend is that we postpone this to the next meeting in July, but proceed that with, at the board's pleasure, either a separate board meeting to really digest it, because this is a long discussion. I mean, there's a significant financial impact, there's a number of options that need to be considered. So I'll leave it up to the board's pleasure if we want to have a special meeting at some point in advance of the second July meeting to hash all of this out so we have a more definitive consensus going into that second July meeting, or we could do something at 5 o'clock or 5:30 on the evening of the second board meeting to discuss those issues. But I just think we need a block of time to talk about it. Can't be something that we do during a normal agenda. You know, we'll sit here for an hour or so and go back and forth. So is the board's pleasure to have a special meeting, or would you do it on start at 5:30 for the second? Trustee Raptor.
I'd be happy to have a special meeting for it. I do think timing is important because some of the things will potentially delay the project, and we don't want to be the reason for the delay. But I would support definitely having a separate meeting so we can hash them all out.
Everybody kind of, let's see, heads nodding.
I would agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Right. But I think it should turn out to be that same day as the second meeting of July, trying to coordinate everyone else's schedule to find a day and time prior to that 2 weeks from today might be rather difficult. So it might be best to that we don't miss out on the second meeting of July, to just do it at 5 or 5:30, depending on the amount of time we think it would take.
Is there...
I can offer up a little bit more insight into that. What the DOT needs the most immediate insight or, you know, recommendations from the board on are things that are going to affect more about the cross-sectional type areas. A big factor would be the bike accommodations and stuff. So you have an opportunity to kind of break it out if you want, if you don't want to try and bite it all up at once. There are CSS type elements, like if you decide on colors or patterns or stuff, that is something that can wait longer. Something like street lighting is something that we need sooner than later, because that impacts how we have to send our plans out to utilities and all that, because, you know, it's going to impact where you can move utilities to because the basis for the street lights. You know, so some of that stuff that you think of is going to actually physically change the width of the roadway or the depth, you know, those are the elements that we need decided upon as soon as possible. The ones that are just like aesthetic, you know, are we going to go with color crosswalks or not? You know, what color are they going to be? Those kind of things, can they definitely have more time to decide upon those. You know, what Craig's getting to with the costs kind of ties those together, but you can break them apart a little bit. You know, lighting being the perfect example. The sooner we can find out about that, the better. But if you decide to cut back and only use one third of the trees that are currently proposed, that is something we can factor in all the way up until final design, until we're ready to let this plan. So, you know, we have what we call an environmental document that we need to be approved soon, very soon. We have to get that in. An environmental document, basically anything that changes the footprint of the roadway is what we're trying to address in that.
Okay. Well, that's very useful insight. I mean, we don't have to necessarily make all decisions, but, you know, the ones that are an impact design, you know, we do have to, you know, come to some kind of consensus. Trustee Apple.
What would be nice is to maybe have a priority list from your perspective, so that when we sit down to have our group meeting, we can say, okay, yeah, why are we talking about trees right now? Let's, you know, talk about number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That'd be
yeah,
great.
Definitely.
You, good insight from you on that, too.
Definitely. Bike lanes and street lighting.
One and two, right there.
Does I kind of like what Trustee Harris said. I mean, doing it the evening of is probably easier because we already have 6:30 set aside. Does anybody foresee a problem with maybe if we set that meeting at 5:15? Maybe it's a little over an hour.
Talk about for me.
If it's broken down that we don't have to make all the decisions at one night, I think it'll be much simpler. I think this is just too many to make at one night. So that's why I would have preferred a different night. But if we're breaking it down in that way, I think that's manageable.
Okay. Anybody see a 5:15 problem on the second meeting?
If we have a priority agenda of items and we know how many items are on that agenda, if it's five, if it's whatever, I think that would help us with determining our time frame.
Three decisions.
a priority list, and then with that list, indications of what has to be decided on that day.
Yep.
You know, would be great.
All right, then what we'll do is we'll set a board meeting for 5:15. I don't know, what is 2 weeks from today?
21st.
And then followed by the regular board meeting at 6:30. So I guess for this particular action item, just move to postpone for further discussion at the July 21st meeting at 5:15. Is there a second to that motion? Trustee Harris, any discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion approved. Item number 7, approval of ongoing services agreement with Grafe. There was a copy of the existing agreement. It's basically time and materials, I think, going forward. They provided the billing rates. Do you want Craig to talk about it a little further? Or this is just a new contract, right, Craig?
Trevor.
The Grafe contract.
Oh, you are the Grafe?
Yep.
Okay. This is a contract, but there's no expenses to the village unless we ask Grafe to do anything for us. And they did include phase three, as it was brought up earlier, which is the southern portion of the village. We can get a firm price from Grafe as far as what they would anticipate that cost to be. But that's what this is for, just any ongoing continuing questions that we were hoping to get some expertise. If there's the zoning changes that if we're working through the planning commission and we want to make these zoning changes, we want to bounce it off them, they charge us a fee. And they're looking at using the fees from 2014, which was their original proposal to the village. So
the contract for the corridor study that's been done that we just reviewed, that was a fixed price contract.
Correct.
But they haven't given us the fixed price for the next phase, which is the southern.
We have not asked for that. What I'd asked them for is if they were to continuously do some services for us, what would that consist of? What would be the fee? So that's what they put together. But they did list phase three in that service, but at a time and material cost factor, so we don't know what that absolutely would be without asking them.
Yeah, my preference is to approve the contract, you know, for the time and materials, for follow-up as needed consulting services, but that we commission, you know, a fixed price proposal for the next phase of the actual corridor study. I don't want to do that on time and materials basis.
I agree. And I did ask Larry tonight how often they do this. He said it's very often they do this, a continuing service. He said, but we have communities that may not call us for over a year, but it's there for them, and they're able to, you know, they're still a client of ours, and we'll do what we can to address whatever the concern or question might be.
No, and they've done a great job, and they've completed their work, and as Mr. O'Rourke suggested, they've done a very good job for the price that they bid. You know, and that's why I want to get a firm price for the next phase. But yeah, there's going to be follow-up, and they should get paid for that. And I think the rates are reasonable. So I'll make the motion to approve the time and materials contract as presented, and have staff commission a fixed price proposal from Grafe for the next phase of the corridor studies. For a second, Trustee Harris.
Second and question. I like the way you presented it, but I also we can bring it up in discussion phase.
Well, then let's have discussion. You second it, so Trustee Harris.
Just want to understand the ongoing operation with them. If there is any interpretation of the current study, that would be included. The ongoing services would involve modifications, implementation, with the annexation, so to speak, with the comprehensive plan. That would be part of the ongoing. But if it's to understand what they have completed, that is part of the fixed fee we've already paid, correct?
Correct.
One of the things that when they were discussing the Green Street area, further investigation may need to take place. That would be in addition to what, you know, that would not be part of the current project. That would be ongoing services that we'd be asking them for further detail as things move forward. That's just one example.
Thank you. Trustee Dirk.
I just would like to question your motion, President Gass. And it is the phase
three.
What,
you think this is a democracy or something?
The phase three, I don't think we've discussed it or planned on it or even budgeted or thought about going there, have we?
I thought we had initial.
I think we're kind of jumping ahead.
In the early stages, we talked about that being yet. Obviously,
something we might do in the future, but I guess to me it's like.
No, it's certainly.
I think
certainly can ask them for what they may look at, what it could cause or may cause, and just, you know, keep
going. Not putting our request out for proposal on that. Or.
No, I think Trustee Dart's, you know, comments, you know, good. You know, I mean, we haven't actually made an affirmative decision to commission that portion of the corridor study. So I think we should go with the original motion, get an estimate from them in terms of, you know, what that might cost us, then we can weigh that along with the decision about whether we proceed with it at all. I mean, is it, you know, too much buck for the bang or vice versa?
Is this a contract? Is it a specific end date term or is it an open-ended contract in regards to services or
until the village would like to in the contract? There's no specific 30-day, 60-day notice that I could find. So it was whenever we felt that we didn't need them, and again, if we don't use them in the course of a year, that's fine. You know, it's an option for us to, someone to go to.
And everything's established on current market rate in regards to
sir. Correct. But based on the 2014 when they proposed, correct.
Right. Any further board discussion? Trustee Raptor.
What I see this to be is basically we're establishing a rate card with them mm-hmm. if they do any service for us. And if it's an open-ended contract, they're saying they'll work for that money for as long as the contract's in force, which I'd be shocked. But if we find that to be a good rate, that's okay. But I would still expect and hope that we, for any project, they would give us an estimate ahead of time. And not just go off of the straight T&M. I mean, whether it be the corridor study or yeah. anything they do for us. Smaller one-hour kinds of things, of course, you know, you don't need an estimate.
Trevor and I had that discussion earlier today, too, and a perfect example is if we wanted some further analysis on Marie Street, and we call them up and they say, well, it's going to be about 10 hours.
Right.
Well, those are discussions that we would like to bring back to the board
yep.
so that you have some air on that aspect.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like that single hour where Trevor needs to get something for planning commission, you know, don't take advantage of that, but yet it's available. But anything a little bit larger, we certainly would want to keep the communication with the board and allow that interaction and discussion to take place before anything is moved forward.
Yeah, it's a nice thing to have a resource like that available, and it's also sometimes it can be a little too easy of a resource to have and utilize and run up the money. So we have to be careful about that.
Trustee Harris.
I may be backtracking a little bit on my second and agreeing with Trustee Dart about if we go forward and get a price from Graf on a third phase, so to speak, are we not allowing other consultants to bid to put forth a closed bid and present it where they're giving a price to us, it's established, it's out there in, as a public record, and then there's a reference point for others. We're not doing a closed bid process. Are we getting ahead of ourselves with doing that if we're not opening it up to others? I realize they're going to have some of the background history they've already gotten ahead of others, but do we need to give others that opportunity to provide us with a price?
You do not have to give other opportunities, to be
okay.
honest with you, because it's correct, Craig, because it is a professional service. We did our due diligence to begin with, and if the board
okay.
is happy with that aspect, you can retain them for that purpose. However, if you so choose that you wanted to go back for an RFP, you could certainly do that as well.
Okay.
So just you do run that risk of asking them for a price in their assets. Yes, you would run that risk.
Okay, but we're not going against any sort of closed bid process by doing this. That's what popped into my head. And I just
very valid point.
Yeah, good discussion.
But I think we got a good relationship with them. They've kind of got a lot of the background done. I'd just like to see what they're. And then it doesn't have to be, you know, I mean, I'm not envisioning a total breakdown, but, you know, approximately how much would it cost to do, you know, the next phase of the study so we can look at it as a board and say, well, it's going to cost about this much. Is it worth it to do it? And then we make a decision to do it or not do it. And if we do it, then we have a price, you know, that we can, and then we'll get more detail. I mean, I don't want to submit a 25-page proposal or anything, but.
Well, one of maybe the simplest aspect is just to ask them how many hours they would anticipate putting into doing phase three.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can, we know the fee structure, but it's not tying them directly to that fee structure.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the approach we want to take with them is that for the next phase of the study, if the board wants to do it, it would be on a fixed price basis. And what would be the, you know, the rough range of what that might look like so the board can...
Rough range is always...
Yeah, I don't want a definitive number. I mean, we'll get to that if we want to do it. I just want to see a ballpark what's it going to cost us, because that will factor into our decision whether we want to do it or not. I mean, clearly we've already done it, you know, at least in the major areas of concern. And whether or not we, you know, run the quarter study into different areas will kind of depend upon the price. You know, so. Any other discussion? All right, the pending motion is to accept the time and materials-based contract for for further consulting services and to commission a rough estimate of the further corridor study work. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion approved. The next item is request from the Greater Green Bay Area Chamber for Young Professionals for a temporary Class B license, self-fermented malt beverages at the Riverview Park, and to waive fee for their current kickball classic on August 15th. Once again, a recurring event. We haven't had any problems or issues with it before. It brings a lot of people into the community. Do I have a motion from the board in terms of the approval of the request? Trustee Dart, is there a second? Trustee Green, any further discussion by the board? All those in favor say aye. Oops,
question. Do we expend any resources to clean up afterwards or anything? They do everything?
Correct. They do everything, correct.
Okay. And I guess we've waived, what is the fee?
For that facility, it would be in the range of $175, somewhere around there.
Okay.
That's like pretty cheap.
Yeah.
We're waiving it.
We're waiving it, so it's zero. But
do we waive it for other people?
You did recently for the what was that other kickball tournament that fundraiser that we did?
Yeah, I
the traveling baseball team.
Yeah, I like the fact that we're helping out other organizations, but are we setting a precedence that, oh, you're giving it to them, but you won't give it to us? And it is a fundraiser for them, and $175 off the top for the facilities that we ultimately end up maintaining. Are we? I don't know, it's a tough call.
I would answer that by the precedence that's probably already been set. If this is a recurring event and it's been held, you know, multiple years already that way.
All right.
And, you know, but I think Rob's right. I agree for this particular one since we've done it for several years now. But it's something we might want to consider, you know, when other people come. I mean, they are using our facility. Nonprofit or for-profit, you know, I don't know if it should make that much difference. It's still our facility, and we have to pay to maintain it. So I think it's something, you know, and actually maybe what Park and Rec can do is take a look at that, you know, at the committee level and give us your thoughts on whether we should, you know, establish a policy in that regard that we just aren't going to waive it and then bring it back to the board and give us some input and maybe we'll set a policy in that regard. Because you're right, I mean, it's not a ton of money, you know, but the other side of the coin is it brings a lot of people into the village, you know, who drive down our streets and, you know, go to our businesses. So, you know, that is a decision we should maybe make as a policy level, you know, so that we're not doing it on an ad hoc basis. So let's have Park and Rec Committee take a look at it and give us your thoughts, and then we'll put it on the board agenda for a discussion as to a prospective policy in the future. Any further discussion?
Who did your fund the benefit?
Current.
Yeah. It's proceeds. Yeah, proceeds of the event are used to support the programming that Current does for their to attract, engage, and develop the young talent. I guess the group, what the group stands for. So, under purpose of the event.
Any other questions to staff or further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the approval motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, motion approved. Covered that one. Action regarding the bike and ped committee. I think it was Trevor. Yep, there it is. Sent us this is something we've been talking about for a bit of time since Walks and Bikes is kind of taking, you know, going out of existence, and we needed some kind of a ad hoc committee to look at these things and look at the comp plan and make sure that, you know, we're considering these issues as we move forward with a number of things. They also have a proposed members of the committee. That's that the committee wants to meet, you know, relatively soon, so the staff recommendation is to approve the creation of the ad hoc committee with the members listed in the memo, with the committee being charged to create a comprehensive bicycle and pedestrian plan for the village. Is there a motion in this regard? Trustee Green?
Move to approve Trevor's recommendation.
All right. Is there a second to that motion? Trustee Harris, any discussion concerning the motion? Trustee Rapp?
Do we need to have an official? This is just an ad hoc committee. This is not an official mm-hmm. committee. Okay.
Sometimes I think the official committee is. I mean, just sometimes I think it just it stills, you know, the creativity. Mm-hmm. You know, you have a certain number of members and a certain. I mean, this way people can come and they can leave and they get their input and yeah. It's much more free flowing that way. Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion approved. Next item is item 11, revised contract for the Brown County Floodplain Management Assistant or Assistance. Craig, maybe a few comments about that?
Yeah, the reason for updating the contract is we have a current contract with Brown County Planning to provide floodplain assistance. And what they do is they provide some of the documentation, provide the documentation work and record keeping that's needed to maintain our FEMA compliance. We just had a request for providing certification documents for a LOMA request by a developer. That's a letter of map amendment to exempt a property from the floodplain. We don't have that expertise and really comply with the requirements that you should have to provide those certifications for a project or a developer. Brown County does, but it was not part of the agreement that they would provide that service. So this updated contract, it's a slightly different form than the last contract because their legal department drafted a little more comprehensive document. But they added in the LOMA assistance, so now they can provide those certifications that are needed when you have a project that is within the floodplain and needs the variance for a LUMA. So that's what this is all about, is to add that capability to their scope of services.
Craig, your June 30th memo indicated the contract was being reviewed by the village attorney. Has Dennis completed that review?
Yes.
Any issues with anything on that to Dennis?
Well, no. He said the contract as written was fine. He did say that he prefers to see a contract without the indemnification clause, but that's pretty much in most contracts. So he said if there ever was litigation, that would come into play. But he didn't say, well, we can't proceed with it. He just prefers not to see that. And his only other comment was that he assumes that the services provided to date by Brown County Planning have been acceptable and the buildings have been acceptable, and I believe that's the case. So.
Okay. Thank you. Trustee Raffer.
Has the rate changed from what we're paying today to the new contract? It's the same rate.
Any other questions?
Was this specific to a certain site?
The request that we have for the certification for a local request, yes, it's a specific site.
Where is it?
The three lots over here off of St. Joseph that are being developed. But it is a common thing to get that request. It just was not included in our scope of services. There'll be more that will come up like that.
Mm-hmm. Trustee Raffer.
If Dennis would prefer, did Dennis provide any alternate wording for the indemnification? So could we approach the county and ask them to strike that from the agreement? Doesn't hurt to ask.
I guess you could. I don't know how they would respond to that.
Mm-hmm. Is that something that our attorney would do, or should we? Do we ask him if it's important enough to him? Would he provide alternate verbiage that we can?
I actually think in this particular instance, you would want the indemnification in here. Because they're the ones that are providing the service. There's nothing we can screw up.
Mutual, right?
I mean, they're providing the service on a consultant basis, so if they screw something up, which seems to me probably about the only thing that could happen, is there's nothing we can screw up because we're not giving them services. So if they screw up, we can seek indemnification from them for their screw up and make them pay for whatever costs or damages we incur. So in this particular instance, I think it's probably not a bad idea to have the indemnification. Yeah,
I take back my comment.
There you go. I would actually want it. I mean, if they give it improper certification and we get in trouble for it, we go to them and say, "Take care of it. It's your problem. You improperly certified. We had nothing to do with that." So I actually think it's probably a good thing. Christy here.
It might be a matter of semantics, but on page 6, item 11, we need to make sure we have a village phone number, fax, not necessarily email, included. That area is blank, just to make sure it's complete.
Yeah. Well, I think when we get around to making the motion, we could just make that part of it, that those details would be included within. Any other? We don't have a motion yet, but any other discussion while we're discussing? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion with respect to this contract. Trustee Dunn?
Move to approve the contract.
Get that with some vigor. Is there a second?
A second with the addition of the...
Yeah, correct. That was part of the motion. So then we have a motion and a second to approve the contract, providing that the Village of Alloway note or phone, fax, and email are included within the final version of the contract. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor?
I'm sorry.
Trustee Raffer.
I just took a look at the old contract, and the hourly rate in the old contract was $50 an hour. Under compensation. $50.08 on page 2, and today it is 55.46. So just thought I brought from that to your attention.
It was 2012.
Yep.
2012 versus 2015.
Right, but I just want people to know it was a rate increase.
All right, so with that discussion point in consideration, any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Unanimously passed. The next item on the agenda is the award of the bid for the annual street paving maintenance contract. We only got one, apparently. According to Craig's memo, it was within the expected, cost, ranges. So do I have a motion concerning the approval of the contract with Northeast Asphalt? Trustee Rafter.
I'll move to approve.
Is there a second? Trustee Harris. Any discussion concerning the approval of this? Trustee Green.
Just a question. Why do we only get one bid? That's pretty unusual.
It is, and I don't know the actual reason why MCC did not bid, but I am surmising that's a smaller company than Northeast Asphalt by quite a bit. We know they are a DOT contractor for Highway 41. Mm-hmm. We have a suspicion that they're fully booked with work.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? Trustee Rafter.
And we have experience with Northeast Asphalt and know that would be a good company. And
yeah, they're doing a current project right now, a water main project.
Okay. And what streets will this cover?
This is several different streets. This is paving the other half of some of the streets that we're doing water main on right now. And where is Savoy? That's a small street that's under this. I think Taft is half, the other half of Taft that we didn't reconstruct a year ago is part of this. And there's one other street. This is basically, this is what this contract is this is our millage paving and our reclaiming work, and this is our patching work, small patching, large patching, and curb replacement from water main breaks and those other types of things. So all of that is in this. So part of it's paving, but the other part of it is doing all the repair work that we do.
So the strip of Briar Lane between Webster and Delahut, or Clay, or between Delahut and Weibel, I think, where there's chunks of road gone?
I don't remember if that's part of it or not. I have to look. This is a smaller contract for us than normal. Normally it's larger than this. And I think there's only three streets or four streets that were paved. Okay.
And you do have an itemized breakout of how all these prices were arrived at, right? I mean, they have provided it because they would have had to measure square footage and everything else, right?
Yeah, it's actually in the tabulation. I think the tabulation is in your packet, but each bid item is in there. And it's a unit price contract.
Okay.
And we manage the project to the dollars. And we estimated we're within $6,000 of what we estimated the cost to be for all the work. So even though it's one bidder, it's pretty much exactly what we thought the cost would be.
Okay. Any other questions? Motion is to approve the contract of Northeast Asphalt and the execution thereof. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion and contract approved. Item number 13A, recommendation from historic preservation minutes. Minutes are in the board packet. Recommendation to approve staff drafting a letter of intent and soliciting estimates from the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee's Milwaukee and Legacy Architects for performing the work to nominate the Miramar Drive Residential Historic District and two individually eligible listings. 3430 Langley Road and 2568 South Webster to the National Register of Historic Places. Is there a motion concerning the Historic Preservation's recommendation? Trustee Green?
Move to proceed.
Is there a second to that motion? Trustee Dart? Any discussion concerning the motion or the recommendation from Historic Preservation? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Recommendation adopted. Action regarding the request from League of Wisconsin Municipalities to contact state legislators and ask them to support eliminating the proposed cap on the Historic Preservation Tax Credit Program. There was some information provided in the materials, press release or announcement from the League concerning what the League views to be the importance of this program, indicating that the governor wants to cap the program at $10 million and require repayment of credits if job estimates as part of the application are not met. The one thing I took note of is the commentary that the program is working. The $35 million of historic tax credits awarded in 2014 will pay for themselves in 7 years by generating an equal amount of new state income and sales taxes and generate $1.38 million in new local property taxes for local services and schools. What I've read on the subject indicates that, you know, the way it exists now without the change makes us competitive with our neighboring states in terms of, you know, attracting, you know, these kinds of developments. This is quite a change, quite a dramatic change. So, Trustee Harris.
My understanding is that that cap was removed in one of the latest budget talks. Debbie sent us an email earlier today that talks about one of the budget sessions where they're doing the revisions, and that cap, if I'm interpreting it correctly, that the cap was removed. Debbie, did you interpret it that way?
That's the way I understood it, was they took it out right now, but the budget hasn't been approved yet, so I'm not sure it can go back in, or all they're asking us is just if we agree with this, just to send that email. So it's just approving
that part of
that, that we agree.
Yep, and what goes out might come back in at a later point in time. So, I'll entertain a motion concerning this if we want to support the League's position. Is there a motion to that effect? Then everybody rush up at once. I'll make the motion that we adopt the League's recommendation concerning contacting our state legislators. Is there a second to my motion? Trustee Dart. Is there any further discussion concerning this? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion approved. Number 15, action regarding performance evaluation forms. Brad, what kind of action are you looking for? I mean, I know I received a packet of them to fill out, but.
Well, in our employee manual, it talks about the village board approved the form. And what the packet that everyone got for the 360s, these are the performance appraisals that would be done on staff. And in a nutshell, the major changes was to work to look at the criteria. The competencies that staff are being evaluated on, and take it from more of a cookie cutter aspect to a dialogue aspect. When you're having your evaluation, it's a process. The process will open up more dialogue between the department head and his staff to find strengths, weaknesses. And then as far as the rating aspect goes, instead of having five categories, it's three categories. So a little bit of a change. The previous performance appraisal did have the competencies in, but it also had a list of other aspects. And those other aspects we removed, or the thought process is to remove those because if you're looking at, we'll use the parks for instance, list all the pieces of the equipment, and then you rate them, you know, operate as satisfactory to exceeding expectations. Well, the expectations are that you operate these pieces of the equipment. The more critical aspect is the teamwork, the creativity, the some of the quality of work, problem solving. Those are the more key issues that are more important in the evaluation than versus just strictly operating the equipment, because that is their job. So that's.
Do you like this form better and believe it'll be a more beneficial form than the previous one?
I believe so.
Then I'll make a motion that we defer to the village administrator in terms of the selection of the evaluation for staff. Trustee Rafter, second?
I would second.
Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? While we're on that subject, 360s, the evals are due
Friday.
Okay. All right, consent agenda 16A through E. I will entertain a motion that incorporates all of the consent agenda. Trustee Dennis moves to approve the consent agenda. Is there a second? Trustee Atwood, any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Item number 17 on the agenda is convened to closed session. Do I have a motion to that effect? Trustee Atwood, is there a second? Trustee Rafter. We'll have to do a roll call vote in terms of convening into closed session. Trustee Harris.
Aye.
Trustee Atwood.
Aye.
Trustee Rafter.
Aye.
President Guest. Aye. Trustee Dart.
Aye.
Trustee Green.
Aye.
Trustee Dennis.
Aye.
We stand in closed session.